So when I think of worship, I always kind of think of it. That's where my mind goes immediately to. I understand, or I have heard over the years, that worship is more than just the music, and that makes intuitive sense to me. I just want to know, what else is it exactly does it mean? What does it mean biblically to worship God, and what is expected of us from God? Welcome back to the Rheology Podcast. Rheology is a nonprofit ministry that is centered around rethinking, researching, and rediscovery, a process that dives deep into the depths of an intimate partnership with God through a concept Jesus initiated called ecclesia. We strive to cultivate an environment that is not only safe to question and seek, but also one that is founded on the truths of partnership, words of hope that were uttered from the lips of Jesus himself. So in this podcast, we'll question Christian tradition, we'll investigate God myths, and we'll listen to those who are stirring, questioning, and desperately seeking more of what God is doing in and around us each day.
Hey everybody, this is Scott Johnson here with the Rheology Podcast. We welcome you back here. That guy over there, that's Brandon Wiseman. Hello, Brandon.
Hello, Scott.
And Brandon and I get together and we talk about all kinds of stuff that pertain to God, Jesus, Christianity, and ultimately what all of that has to do with us. And so that's what the Rheology podcast is all about. That's what Rheology is kind of all about, is digging deeper and asking questions on what God really meant when he said the things he said, and what God really meant when he had Jesus say the things that he said, and what those things have to do with our lives. And so today we're continuing a little series we do called God, Coffee, and Questions. I don't have coffee today, Brandon, but I do have a brew.
Mm.
It's a different kind of brew. It's root beer.
Root beer. Nice. Yeah, we moved these recordings.
Frosted mug. Yeah.
Yeah, that's key. That's crucial for that. Yeah. Yeah, we moved these recordings to the afternoon. It's a little tough to be drinking coffee this late in the afternoon.
Especially for me, when I work in a coffee shop all day long, I don't really want to drink coffee. But what do you got? McAllister's, what is it?
Diet Dr. Pepper.
That's your brew.
Yeah.
This is Frosty.
Nice. I
haven't
had
that. Beer since 1939. I am a little Southern bit of a root beer snob. It's actually a Northern thing.
Mm.
I've been thrilled to see it in Southern, of all places, Aldi.
Oh, you okay.
Know. Yeah, that's Aldi, right? That's their MO. They have these weird
random
stuff. And you better get it. If you don't get it when you're there, it'll be gone.
It's not gonna
and
be
we'll
there
never
next
ever have it again. So I grabbed two little things of four bottles because I kind of grew up on Frosty root beer.
Nice. But
it's a root beer that actually has all natural, not all natural flavorings, but it definitely has like pure cane sugar and not
sarsaparilla.
Sarsaparilla. I'm gonna drink this. This mug.
Okay. It's better than mine. I don't have a Frosty mug either.
Ah, that's good. Needed that. Well, as Brandon and I were joking off camera, I'm barely ready to do this. So we're going to do that. Hey, also, we want to say this every time. If you're watching this on YouTube, first of all, thanks. And we'd really love for you to consider subscribing to the channel so that you could, you'll never miss when we do this. And right now we're kind of doing them like twice a month. But also you can just, hit the little like button. That's massive if you would do that. If this pertains to you, if you really think, man, this is like really up my alley, and you know other people that you think this would be really up their alley too, go ahead and share it with them. That'd be great. We'd appreciate it. If you're listening to this on wherever you find your podcasts audio wise, again, we ask you to do the same kind of stuff. Let us know you're out there. And if you want to go to our Instagram account, or you can even leave comments here, let us know the questions that you may be going through or thinking about. because we'll put them in. We'll put them in the rotation with all the stuff that's on Brandon's mind. We'll throw them in there too, because.
Yeah, otherwise, this is just like my own personal counseling session that I get to have a couple times a month with everybody watching.
Yeah. And but everybody's probably going, oh man, I'm so glad he asked that question.
We'll see.
Okay, so let's do this. What are we talking about today?
Question for today is about worship. So, well, even going back to Fortville when we were there together, we led worship together. And I've been leading, not leading, but playing in a worship band for a couple decades at this point. And it's been a big part of my life. And so when I think of worship, I always kind of think of it. That's where my mind goes immediately to. I understand, or I have heard over the years, that worship is more than just the music, and that makes intuitive sense to me. I just want to know what else is it exactly does it mean? What does it mean biblically to worship God, and what is expected of us from God? So.
Well, you're bringing up our past and our history together. Obviously, for those listening or watching that don't know, Brandon was actually a little, he's just a teenager boy when I came to town and became his youth minister. So yes, you
Turning 40
obviously
this
help.
year, by the way.
Yeah. Why did you do that, man? Oh man, that's a low blow. Anyway, yes. So I was only 16 when I met you. No, it doesn't work, does
Close.
it? Okay. So yeah, you helped me lead worship, and worship's a real tricky word because we use it so again, we talk about words that are just used so flippantly in the realm of Christianity that we come to see them as either defined connected to like four or five different definitions that are super loose, or in this case, like really one, right? It's what we do on Sunday morning. We go to God's house and we worship him.
Get slapped onto that part of the service for Sunday morning.
Yes. So, and so that is worship. And for a lot of people, the vast majority of Christians, I would guess, that's like three songs. And or four. And they and then there's a sermon. For you and me, when we were doing worship services in Indianapolis area, we were actually kind of, honestly, kind of looking back at it, it's kind of cool that we were able to have a very own specific student or teenage worship service on Sunday mornings in conjunction with the adult one that was going on down the hall. And so for us, we were always really kind of setting the stage for what I wanted us to all understand what worship was. Which was a time to really connect with God through a series of events that we would do, and not really just be the three or four songs that led into the sermon. So I don't know if you remember, but we had like three different styles of worship. So we had live, which was with electric guitars and all that kind of stuff, and it pretty much was,
Yeah, it's what most
four or
Protestants
five.
will think of as worship nowadays.
Four or five songs, and then maybe like a skit or a video or something like that, and then me teaching or somebody else teaching or whatever. And then we did Unplugged, which was all pretty much acoustic type of instruments, and it was a little more chill, but still kind of like, what most people experience. But for me, my favorite by far was what we called circle worship, where it was primarily just me and you with two guitars. And we had, books like songbook kind of things that I'd made in binders and stuff scattered on the floor. We were all circled around in like couches and chairs and stuff like that. It was candle lit. And students, before they even came in, would take their hands and put them into the laver. And that was like a preparation for them to prepare their hearts to come and really kind of like, connect with God and let God know how they're feeling that day and let God talk to them. And so, and then he would come in and then he would pick up a songbook, and we had no agenda really. And they just said, "Hey, let's sing this." Okay, we would start playing that, sing that, and then we would do maybe some prayer stuff, some communion stuff, and stuff like that. But to me, those were the moments that really stand out. And then we would do that kind of worship whenever we went on the road to like conventions and conferences and stuff like that. So, our version of worship, we have a foundation that's very, very different
I was going to say, I haven't
from
seen that
vast
anywhere
majority.
else since then.
No. It's funny too, because I have a lot of people ask me, and over the last several years, they will ask me, "Hey, where do you go to church? Or where do you go to worship?" And I will tell them that, Robin and I pretty much looked for churches for a year. We visited churches for a year, and every church did the exact same thing. And it is that like setup of like three or four songs that pretty much just led to the sermon. And I've been on the back end of that too, where when I was involved in church planning and stuff like that, our business meetings, if you want to call them business meetings or planning meetings or whatever, they're pretty much dominated by the worship service. And how did we think this last one went? Now, how do we set up this next one? And honestly, every one of those were the center was the sermon, and the music and the other elements were just helpful for people to get ready to hear this topic. And even the songs, maybe the name of the songs or whatever, they were picked to match the sermon series or whatever. So
Sometimes a stretch.
most
I see
times.
where you're going with this, but that's a stretch.
it's only connected by a word. That's it. So for me and you, it's I think you and I probably have a pretty good healthy understanding of what a worship service, could really look like, to the point where people would be like, "I really like this. I want to be a part of this." And matter of fact, in the ministry in the Annapolis area in Fortville that you and I are a part of, we had that teen worship service, but we had adults and young adults coming from down, in big church, because they're like, "Why can't we do this down there? You guys are, this is cool."
Little harder to
So that
sit in
was
a
like,
circle with a couple hundred people, but
it is a little harder, but I welcome the challenge. So those are like, I love those moments, man, and those are the things that stick with me. And unfortunately, you're right, those have like set the bar high for me. And any other place I go to, like you said, doesn't come close to the feeling or experience. And I think the main thing with what we did, again, it was designed for people to be able to connect with a real God and not just come and sing some songs or go through some sort of motions, of a lot of worship services. I don't know about you. I get your take on this. When I go to some worship services, and like the very first song, people are standing with their hands up, and I'm like, "Dang, either you really came prepared today, or it's kind of a Pavlov's dog,
They hear the first chord, and that's what prompts the hands to go
hands go up, hands go up." Yeah. So
I don't
I
know.
sometimes, what do you think?
Yeah, I definitely see that. I don't want to ascribe, obviously, neither do you, I know, negative intentions to anybody that doesn't deserve them. But I have to imagine there's a spectrum of people, some of which are more on the line of this is a kind of just a thing we do. This is a response. And then there are others who maybe who have genuinely before they got there, started the worship process on their own. And so they're already in the midst of it. So, yeah.
Yeah. I would say that there are people who've experienced worship for the first time. That's like, maybe they came up on the Catholic background or something like that. And they're like, oh my gosh, this is like so freeing or whatever. And so for them, they're ready to raise their hands, you know? I think about the vast majority of people though that don't, and the vast majority of people who don't even sing and are, you know, they just kind of stand. And I wonder for them if they go, this is worship to God. This is what God wants, you know, is this. And I do, because I can't imagine that they probably don't just really feel it.
Yeah.
You know, I've never been a hand raiser.
No,
but there have been several moments. Yeah. There have been several moments, where I've been involved in a worship service and I became extremely emotional, and I felt that I was connecting with God. And I think one of the another thing too, to say this, to be a little more clear on what we did, you know, one of the things that I always said to our students was this, is that you're coming to this place to put a smile on God's face. That's what you're doing. The connection here isn't about, hey, God, fill me up, make me feel better. You know, as we're like rubbing Aladdin's lamp and all that kind of stuff. It was really more of like, I'm coming to serve you. I'm coming to present you with like my offerings almost, which my offerings are, you know, to let you know how I feel about you. And I'm trying to make you happy here, because the cool thing is that if you make God happy, if you spend a lot of your energy making him happy and emptying yourself, then God then fills you back up and overflowing, as scripture says. And so it's a cool little symbiotic kind of a deal, because I'm coming and pouring myself out to God. And the cool thing is that when he's pleased, you know, that flows into us and fills us back up. Okay, so Brandon, I thought that we would talk about, if we're talking about worship and what it is, and, you know, as we've said, you know, you and I experienced, you know, maybe an American version of worship. And what we see is worship in a different way. But I thought it would probably be smart for us to kind of go back through the Old Testament, New Testament, and look at what the word is there. Because as we know, and I want to say this too, I think Christians are super afraid to challenge translations. You know, it's like the idea, this idea that like the, for instance, some people have about the King James Version. It's like that one was handwritten by God somehow. That, like, that was the version that Moses brought down from Mount Sinai, you know, and not realizing that that was actually commissioned by a king and it had stipulations that the king had. So they're not, none of them are perfect, I don't think, but we're trying to, the goal shouldn't be to find a perfect, but to try to perfect even more translations for our modern culture. And so I wanted to do this because this word is, the word worship probably should not be used to translate what's behind the Old Testament. And I'll tell you why. So in the Old Testament, let's say, for instance, there's Genesis 22, verse 5. And this is when Abraham finally gets a son, right? It's in Isaac. God grants, finally fulfills his promise. And now, as we talked about a few episodes ago, you know, now God has asked him to go and, like, offer his son up to God. And so this is what Abraham, when they get there, this is what he says in Genesis 22, 5. He says, so he said to his servants, because, you know, he had people come with him to go do this. This wasn't just a 10-minute little jaunt that we're going to go over here and do this. It was probably like a weekend, a guy's retreat in a weird way.
The worst one ever.
The worst one ever. It turned out okay, but whoa. So Abraham says to his servants, hey, you two stay here with the donkey while the boy and I go up there, and we will, here's the word, worship, and then we'll return to you. And so the word worship here is the Hebrew word shachah, or shachah, however you want to do it, if you don't want to spit phlegm at somebody. Shachah, it literally means to bow down in a prostrate form, not prostate. That's the
something different,
something way different. but to bow down, fully prostrate, you know, to the ground, literally. And it's basically a show of respect, a show of humility, allegiance, fidelity, devotion. And if you think of not only was this like something that was done as an Eastern cultural kind of a deal, but I mean, you can simply think of like kings, you know, people bowing down to kings and stuff. Have you ever, do you have HBO Max? You guys subscribe?
We did for a while. We don't anymore.
Did for a while?
Yeah.
They have a miniseries show called John Adams. Did you see that or no? So I think, you know, I'm a huge history buff, and this is just a miniseries, you know, limited series on John Adams, and
the second president of the U.S. Is that who we're talking about?
Yes. Yep.
Okay.
Yep. And it kind of talks about his involvement, how you know, he's obviously he's a signer to the Declaration. He's super super involved, and so there's a scene, though, after America or the colony defeats the British Army, and John Adams is asked to be an envoy and an ambassador to England. So because they're trying to like tie up, you know, this relationship, right? And so he goes and there's one of the, he's going to have to go before King George, who they just humiliated and defeated, right? And so he's got to go before him, and he's trying to show respect and all that kind of stuff and friendship and whatever to create, you know, heal the relationship. And so this king's, one of the king's assistants is with him, and he's like showing him what he has to do. He's like, okay, whenever we open the door, you need to bow.
Yeah.
Okay. You need to step 5 steps in and bow again. You need to move to your left like 5 steps and bow again and take 5 steps forward and bow again. It's okay. And like he's showing him, like, you know, so let's see your bow. And, you know, John Adams is getting down there and his knees are cracking and stuff. And he's like, okay, you need to go lower. And he tries to go lower and he's like, no, you need to go lower. And he makes a comment like, sir, if I go any lower, I'll be matched with the dust on the floor. So like, this is the idea, right? Of like going lower and lower and lower. This Hebrew word occurs 179 times in the Old Testament. And most of the time it is translated as bowing down. And for some reason, we in other areas, we've translated as worship. And maybe, I don't know this, but maybe in certain aspects where it's translated as worship, it's being used to, you know, as a life devotion towards somebody, not just to a show of respect. Because we have in Genesis 33, Jacob and Esau, you know, the two brothers, and Jacob steals his brother's, you know, Esau's birthright, and he has to flee for his life. So years later, he gets word that his brother's looking for him, and he's freaking out and panicking, and there's no way to get around it. He's going to have to meet his brother. He's actually asked all of his entourage and family and everything to go like across the river to like go into safety, and then he'll meet his brother. And so what does he do in Genesis 33 when he reunites his brother? He bows down to the ground, prostrate to the ground 7 times. It makes me think of John Adams, right?
Yeah, right.
7 different times he's bowing down all the way down to the ground. You can might, you know, abdicate that he's just like scared to death his brother's gonna kill him and seek revenge. But the bottom line, he's just trying to show a sign of respect. And so that's not translated as worship.
There.
So who knows? The word for sure is never really actually used as the act of singing or dancing or praising or anything really connected to what we would see as worship, as we've said before, like a worship service. It's not really connected to that.
Even when, and you probably haven't looked this up yet, but I'm just throwing this at you. Even when, like, David talks about worshiping with, he says, you know, his famous, "I'll become even more undignified than this," when he's, leading the march there, and he's got, I think it mentions musical instruments and stuff, but maybe he doesn't use the word worship there.
Well, I mean, the thing is, like, what we definitely know is that Old Testament worship, or if we said it a different way, if we said Old Testament devotion to God leads to, like, sacrifice and offerings and festivals and singing and dancing and praising. It leads to those things because that's what devotion requires, like in the Old Testament, right? So if you're going to go and devote yourself to God, or, you know, shachah God, then, it's a full on life devotion that requires, in a weird way, as we've said before, sacrifice. Yeah. It requires offering. It requires, you know, doing the festivals. It requires singing. So it's like, I'm going to worship with sacrifice, right? Mm-hmm. I'm going to show my dedication by singing, but it doesn't replace dancing. Yeah. Yeah. I worshiped the Lord. And that we're supposed to automatically know that was dancing. No.
Yeah.
It would be more along the lines, I worshiped the Lord. I devoted myself to the Lord by singing praises to him.
So we've narrowed it. So our English word worship narrows that concept down much more than what it means in the Hebrew Bible.
Right. Because today we could say, well, I worshiped the Lord on Sunday, you know, because we were singing. We sing songs. And it's like, well, those two things aren't the same.
Right.
So matter of fact, if we go look at the New Testament, then this is one of my favorite words in the New Testament. I love this word. It's called proskuneo. And that's the Greek equivalent here to the Hebrew. So proskuneo literally means the act of your dog licking, a dog licking its master's hand. Right. So it kind of makes me think of, like, Lord of the Rings, when Pippin has to go and he is in front of the steward of Gondor, you know, and he's got his hand out there and he has to, you know, kiss the ring. It's like, ooh, you know, it's kind of a creepy kind of deal. But that is like showing ultimate, like, here's my position. My position is down. Your position is up. And so even in this Hebrew culture, or this Eastern culture, it's not just Hebrew. It's also like this, the Hebrew word also is like the symbolic idea of taking a fig and how do they get the oil out of the fig, right? They have to press this thing down, or an olive, right? They have to press it. And the idea of pressing that, it becomes very, very, very thin, very small. So, so it's humility. Same idea. Yeah. Humility. Yeah. It's being pressed all the way down. And it's basically being able to say, hey, here's the deal. Like with Jacob, he's not saying I've come to devote my life to you, but I'm come to you to let you know that, you know, it's almost like saying, I was wrong.
Yeah.
You're right. I'm down. You're up. And so we see, one of the first things we see with the word worship in the New Testament is Matthew 2:2, where the Magi figured out, hey, there's a new king being born. Let's go check it out. And they say, where's the one who is born king of the Jews? For we saw his star when it rose and have come to worship him. Now, did they come to sing songs to him? No. Did they come to devote their lives to him? Probably not. But they did come to, you know, respect him and honor him and show a deep amount of respect for another king. So basically, when you see the word worship throughout all of the Old Testament and even the New Testament, it's really this idea of going low. It's this idea of really, you know, of self-sacrifice, kind of like what we had talked about a living sacrifice is, right? So like if you want to get with God and you want to be a part of this ecclesia, this partnership, well, there's two pieces of the puzzle. And, you know, for both leaders, those puzzle pieces don't fit together. So in order for a perfect union or this thing to fit together, we have to become something different. And so that's the idea of worship. That's the idea of going low, is taking the position of a servant. And that's why, you know, Paul even says, hey, you need to do the same thing Jesus did.
Yeah.
Jesus did the same thing. Jesus went low. He went down and he went prostrate and allowed God to be, you know, God, and he took the role of the servant.
Yeah.
So it's important for us to see that, like, right off the bat, that is what this word really, really means. And unfortunately, in our modern culture, we have turned it into singing and dancing and praising and lifting our hands and songs.
Yeah, at its base level, it's almost, you know, taking it even further back to Genesis 2 and 3, it's almost at its very basic level of us recognizing our place in all of this, what we are originally intended to be, images of God in partnership with him. It's taking time to reflect on that position rather than what we were bent towards, which was the original fall, which was seeing ourselves as, you know, our own God, seeing, you know, defining for ourselves what we should do and what we shouldn't do and that type of stuff. So worship is at its core kind of reflecting on, now this is our position relative to God who created us.
Exactly.
From the whole Rheology team, we hope these podcasts are encouraging and educational. Rheology exists for three main reasons: to reach, train, and equip those who want to go deeper with God in this partnership called Ecclesia. If God has been stirring in your heart, where you are wondering if there's more than what you've been experiencing in today's 21st century Christianity, we'd love to connect with you, to hear your story and help you know that you are not alone. You can simply contact us via the website, rheologylife.com, or reach out via Instagram at @rheology_life. Thanks, and we'll see you next time.